This is Just Women, every Tuesday at 1 o'clock on Brooklands Radio.
Hello and welcome to Brooklands Radio and the Just Women Show. This is our weekly programme when we get to chat with inspirational local ladies about their lives, their work and subjects they are passionate about. I'm Anne Twist and today I'm delighted to introduce a new presenter to Just Women, Amanda Weller, who has been a guest with us on a number of occasions. Welcome to Just Women, Amanda. Great to be working with you.
Thank you, Anne. I'm really excited to be part of the team. Looking ahead to today's programme, we're going to be chatting with two interesting women about diverse subjects, including coping with an empty nest when the children go to uni and financial issues as a result of marriage breakdown.
Thank you, Amanda. And so to make a start, I'm delighted to present our first guest, Jackie Gray. Welcome to Just Women, Jackie.
Hello, very nice to be here.
Great to have you on the show. Before we start talking about your thoughts on the empty nest, could you give us a little background about you and you know, what you've been doing for our listeners?
Yeah, I've been working in marketing for a long, long time. I had a break, however, when I had children. I had a lovely 8 years off doing papier-mâché, getting involved in the PTA, etc.
Yeah.
Then went back to work as my kids got older, and now they're both off at university.
Full-time. So,
yes.
So you have been working while they've been, you know, while you were bringing them up.
Yes, I have.
Yeah, it's not that you've been a full-time mum and now you're full-time empty nester.
No, such, absolutely.
No,
yeah.
No. Okay. And how old are they?
21 and 19.
And there's a 19-year-old just gone off recently.
No, he's just gone into his second year. They're going to be 22 and 20 next week.
Oh, okay. So, okay. So you've had sort of a year of a complete empty nest.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And this is year two.
Year two. Okay. And you're not liking it, are you?
Not at all. I'd spoken to lots of people and they'd said, oh, you won't like it. And I thought, no, I probably won't. And I really don't.
Okay.
And I find a couple of days before they go back, I start to get anxious and a bit short-tempered around the home. And I didn't realise that that's actually what it is.
Okay.
I'm preparing for them to go again. And yeah. I don't like it.
And actually, you probably don't like getting short-tempered when they're going to go away and that'll be their memory of you.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Have they gone a long way? Are they sort of up in Scotland or are they up the road? Or
no, we've got Leeds, which is quite a trek.
Yes.
And then UEA in Norwich. So that's also quite a trek.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Are they happy at uni?
Yeah, they are. They are. I'm not so sure they're as happy as I am the fact that I go and see them at least once a term.
Okay. I mean, that's not much, actually.
No.
I thought you were going to say I'm up there every other week with cakes and, you know, gifts and all sorts.
No, I fill their fridge and I bring lubrication.
Oh, do
for
you?
Young. Yeah.
Okay.
They'll allow mum in if I bring, you know, something for them to drink. Yes.
Okay.
And fill up their fridge with meat, etc., because they can't afford to. Yeah,
I mean, I think that goes without saying. I've got two at uni. Whenever I go up and see them, yeah, Sainsbury's always features on the agenda for the day. I don't think that's unusual. So, you know, they've gone off to uni. You're working, and you have been working before. So,
yes. So
is it the evenings then? You know, or the weekends, or
it's a bit of both. The evenings, yes. I mean, my husband works very hard, very long hours, and at the weekends he goes off to the football. He plays tennis. Whereas I used to spend quite a bit of time with the kids. You know, we'd go out for lunch.
Yeah.
At least once a week, or usually at the weekends, or go shopping or whatever. And if they had no plans in the evening at the weekend, then I'd quite often do a dinner and invite some of their friends over, and it would end up being a sort of a mini sort of gathering.
Right.
Because I knew if I invited their friends over, they'd stay in.
Okay, that's quite an interesting one, because that's quite a different kind of relationship than some people have with their kids.
Yeah.
Because it's more like you've lost your best friends. Your best friends have gone off to
different
parts of the country.
That said, you know, the idea that they're my best friends makes my hairs go up on the back of my neck. I am an authoritarian when needs be.
Yeah.
And I am the one that makes sure they're studying and looking after themselves and getting any kind of assistance and help that they need, which perhaps a friend might not be in that vein.
But the whole Saturday night thing, you know,
that's
not necessarily
that's
typical
true. No, I'm a party animal and they are too, so.
Oh, okay. Tell us more. I mean, I've got two of that sort of age, but my sort of experience feels slightly different. Yours are coming up, aren't they?
Yes, they're a bit younger, so yes, I haven't quite got to your stage yet.
Yeah. Mm.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people have very different experiences of this. And the fact that you're working, obviously your days are filled. Whereas, yes. I do know people whose children have gone off to uni. And, one mum said, I just spend my day watching daytime TV.
Yeah, that's worrying. Yeah, I mean, I think for me, although I don't work full time, it was actually the kids aren't going to be here. What am I going to do with that time? I don't want to be, just sitting in their room looking at their stuff, wishing they were at home. Because that's not healthy for me.
Yeah.
And B, then I would consume them when they got home. So it was about, actually, I do need to fill up some of that spare time, really.
Yeah. And do you say your husband works sort of long hours and away
and
stuff?
Yes, he does. Yeah. So I got involved.
You've been doing everything for them.
Yeah. Yeah. But then I get involved in, now, I've got that spare time. I've sort of book clubs, film clubs, swimming, just to fill the time. And actually, I love all those things.
Yeah. Yeah, but at the end of the day, you're still missing.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if reading up on it, it is, the sort of the thinking is, right, now you've got an opportunity to try different things and, take up new hobbies and travel more and all of that.
Yes.
So you're obviously recognising that, but...
Yeah, no, I acknowledge that, but I think, and somebody said, it must be easier every time you take them back. I said, actually... For me, it's slightly harder because each time you take them back, they're moving further and further away from you as being as important in their life. They're getting more and more independent. So, every time it's actually a little bit sadder. But, my overriding thing is it's great they're going, they're enjoying life.
Yeah.
Their world is opening up massively. But
yeah. Oh, we were talking about this earlier, actually, because, one part of the empty nest syndrome, I can't believe there's actually a syndrome called this, but one part of that is that people sometimes are concerned that their children aren't happy, so they kind of have that anxiety about their children. That isn't the issue for you, is it?
No, I mean, they're not unhappy, they're enjoying it, but they have anxieties like, I don't know what the percentage is now of children who... have anxieties. There was a piece in the press today about it, universities.
Yeah.
So obviously I talk to them and I have a good relationship in that they're able to say, look, I'm struggling at the moment, so I can either help them get support when they're at home or when they're at university.
Yeah.
I mean, that, and it's a valid concern that I think parents unfortunately do have these days.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, obviously there's that whole... struggling with the workload and then there's that whole homesickness thing, which is a slightly different thing, isn't it?
Yeah And there's nobody telling you to put your phone away and stop playing the game. You're in a room a lot on your own, so for a lot of kids, I think certainly in the first year, they can actually be quite isolated in their halls of residence.
Yeah, and I suppose a lot of this is down to making, do you know people who are at the same uni as you? And if not, how, what kind of character are you able to get out there and mix? And
absolutely. But when they come home, the stories, it's great, and you get to meet their new friends, very diverse friends from the ones they had that lived around the corner that you've known since they were tiny.
And that's part of the joy of university, isn't it? Just opening up all these different opportunities.
Yeah, absolutely.
And learning to be independent and explore all these different types of people that they're going to meet, and viewpoints and social situations as well, actually. And that's a big thing, isn't it?
And they run out of money, so they have to go and find jobs. And that's quite interesting to see them actually get up out of bed and earn some money so that they can then go out. That's neither of my kids did before they went away, and now they do.
Yeah, I mean, it's all part of that losing a slight control, isn't it? Because they would have come to you for money previously, but now they want to earn it for themselves, in many cases, although there's obviously still plenty of kids that just say, Mum, can you give me another whatever?
Yes.
Tenner, 100, whatever it is. But, it's all part of just getting out there and growing up, isn't it?
Yeah.
Which is nice to see.
Yes,
and
it is.
Yeah. But obviously, some children cope less well than others, and some parents cope less well with the whole scenario than others.
Yeah.
So do you find that your friends, you have supported you in your sort of situation?
There are a few who feel, I think, probably as strongly as I do.
Mm-hmm.
And there are others who go, it's just brilliant.
Yeah.
And I go, isn't that marvellous?
Mm.
But for me, it's not a step backwards. It's just very different. And yeah, it makes me sad when they go back.
Mm.
And I've now taken to taking them back. And I find that easy if I take them back with all their stuff, buy all their food, fill their fridge, and then I'm saying goodbye to them rather than them sort of saying goodbye to me.
Okay.
And I know they're safe in there.
Yeah. Right. Well, hold that thought, listeners. We're going to take a quick break now and we'll be back chatting with Jackie Gray about the empty nest.
You're listening to Just Women on Brooklyn's Radio.
Hair Mechanics is Surrey's premier hair and beauty salon group, with two superior salons, one in the heart of West Byfleet and the second in the Bourne Valley Garden Centre of Addlesden. Hair Mechanics offers hairstyling and finishing, beauty and holistic therapies, nail treatments, tanning and electrolysis. For our office promotions, contact information and more, please see our website hairmechanics.co.uk or call 01932 350 877. Hair Mechanics, Surrey's premier hair and beauty salon group.
There's a new restaurant in Esher. Seven Bluebird serves modern European classics for breakfast, lunch and dinner, not forgetting afternoon tea. They offer delicious food made from locally sourced products, all freshly prepared, offering great service in a classy yet cosy setting. Ladies looking for a special place, try us for lunch or your special occasion. Seven Bluebirds serves breakfast all day. Yes, eggs benny even at 3 p.m. and all the classics as well as our highly rated warm banana bread and heavenly French toast. The Sunday lunch menu offers a two-course set menu with our most popular items at only £16. Menus and reservations at sevenbluebirds.co.uk.
Are you feeling depressed, lonely, stressed, suffering from low self-esteem? At Esher Groves, we understand the demands everyday life can place on you. That's why we've brought together a community of skilled experts to work with you in a small group therapy setting. You'll meet others in similar situations and learn techniques to help you feel better. Experience a sanctuary of tranquility and well-being at Esher Groves. Call us now on 0345 1122 300 or visit us at eshergroves.com.
This is Just Women, every Tuesday at 1 o'clock on Brooklyn's Radio.
Welcome back to Just Women, and we're chatting with Jackie Gray, a local parent who's been talking to us about her experiences of the empty nest. We're going to talk now a little bit more generally, I think, about how other people are experiencing. Obviously, for you, you've got a great relationship with your children. We were sort of saying earlier when we were chatting that possibly some people suffer the empty nest because maybe they haven't got a great relationship with their children. It feels like unfinished business when the children go. They kind of look at it as though they've gone now, and I haven't really kind of form the relationship with them that I was expecting to. Do you think that's sort of a valid point? Or
absolutely. I think everyone experiences it differently, and some people perhaps say they don't experience it at all.
Yeah.
But no, I think, and there are, I tend to think that perhaps those people who are experiencing it because of that relationship possibly are less likely to talk to other people about it and therefore normalize it and not necessarily get the kind of support that they need from friends.
Yeah, and, you know, also I was reading today that quite often fathers really feel this whole kind of empty nest issue because, you know, quite often they're the ones that do actually sort of do more travelling and are working away.
Yes.
And possibly the mother at home, even if she's working full time, has managed to juggle a lot and do the sort of, the you know, picking up of the kids and doing the dinner and all of that kind of thing. And they kind of feel that they've, suddenly the children have gone to uni and they haven't really formed that bond with them that they were hoping to because they've just been too busy.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, I've got some friends who've kind of experienced that. The father goes out to work at the crack of dawn and doesn't get back till very late.
Yeah.
But he's now got involved in visiting the university, so that's his way of,
oh, okay,
you know, having not been able to do anything thus far,
yeah,
actually he's taking time out to go and visit the university.
Oh, on the open days, really good, you mean, before
yeah,
they even...
Yeah, which is a really good way of sort of seeing your child as less of a child and more as an adult who might make their own choices about where they want to go.
And having some input into the university.
Yeah.
That's a good idea, actually. Actually, I've heard of a few fathers doing that, to be honest. You're looking at university. Are you looking at universities yet, Amanda? I can't remember.
We have done the rounds, yes. But in fact, we're putting the whole thing off for a bit. So. Yeah. But yes, and in fact, it was me who did most of the visits, but my... But the father, you know, my husband came in for one of them. And that was really important, actually, because it rounds off the whole discussion possibilities at home and is a much better understanding of what it all involves if, obviously, they've, you know, both sides have experienced it.
And if the father has had an input, it, as you say, it kind of rounds the whole thing. And actually, as a mother, it's pretty dreary to feel you've got to do all of that stuff, isn't it?
Yeah. It's nice to have somebody else to bounce the ideas off, too, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah, definitely. But then what about the whole, you know, I think your daughter's in her fourth year. So she's...
Yes, final year, yeah.
Fourth and final year. So is she coming back?
Yes, she will. She will do. She does graphic design and she's been informed that the best place to get work is London. But I think her plan is because she went straight off to university rather than having a gap year.
Okay.
Is to do a bit of bar work, earn some money and travel for a bit before suddenly... having had all that freedom, suddenly getting into the rat race.
Yeah. Oh, how are you going to feel about that when she's in Australia or wherever?
That's okay. I'll have my son. I'll be annoying him and visiting him regularly.
Yeah. I mean, actually, this generation of kids, you know, I've got two at uni as well, and my daughter in particular, it's constant texting all day long. To the point where it's quite annoying for me. I'm trying to get on with stuff and she's I'm getting text from her. But you know, if we look back to when we were that kind of age, we went off to uni and our parents didn't hear from us for ages, probably, you know, unless we wrote a letter or actually picked up the telephone. I don't know how many of us have did that. So it should be easier with FaceTime and everything, shouldn't it?
Yes, I guess. But I mean, I don't know, my son is somebody who I will only hear from him if he's lost a shoe. Or, you know, he needs some money.
Yeah. Oh, that my son's exactly the same. Yeah.
I don't get the just let's have a chat. So the call always has an agenda.
Yeah.
As does the text. So it doesn't fill your heart with quite the same.
No.
As having a good chat.
That is completely my experience. If I see my daughter's name flash up, we're just having a chat. If it's my son's name, I think, what's he done or what does he want?
Exactly. Yes.
That is automatically the reaction. You've got all this to come. Yeah, you're
so
gonna love it.
No news is good news.
Yes, to some degree. Yeah, I think it's a fine balance, and some parents don't go to see their kids at all when they're at university, and that works for them.
Yeah.
Whereas others will go and will spend time with them, and their kids will come back. And I think particularly in the first year, I think it's quite useful for the kids to realise that they can come back because they strike out, but then suddenly they might find actually this is scarier than I thought.
Yes, that definitely happens, doesn't it?
And you as a parent being able to know that actually they, you know, they're very, very welcome to come back.
Yeah.
So that you can see them.
I mean, we got into this quite early. My children went away to school at 13. So we had this easing in, if you like, of the empty nest, you know, because they go away to school and they come home and we go and watch matches and things. So it was very much an easing in process. But I'll never forget when I took my son to uni on his first day, he just looked horror struck.
Yeah.
And you know, the door, as you say, is always open for them to come back. And he didn't come back for a whole term. It was fine, but the look on his face as we were leaving him, and I thought, you know, it looked as though he'd never been left anywhere ever before. And I did have that sort of feeling.
Yes.
But you kind of it's kind of tough love, isn't it, in a way? You
kind of
just have to leave them to get on with it.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, no, I will go once a term and that's it.
Yeah.
I'm allowed just about.
Yeah.
My husband's always said, you know, our job is to prepare them to leave.
Oh, absolutely.
Actually always gets me when he says that. Like,
yeah. Well, and I think that's part of the sort of empty nest thing. It's less about, yes, they're going to come back. And people say, well, they're coming back at Christmas. They're coming back at Easter. Why? It's not about that. They're moving away. They are moving away in a sort of independent sense.
Yeah. They're growing away.
And your life as a parent is changing. You're not needed as much. Yeah. And you know, to some degree, it's hand on heart. It's a phase of my life. Their worlds are opening up 360. Maybe mine's not in some ways.
Yeah.
It's not opening up as much. And maybe that's part of it.
It's quite an interesting point. And I was thinking that earlier when you were talking about taking, you know, delivering your children to uni. I remember when I first took my daughter to uni, and she was the oldest one, first one to go, all I remember was thinking was, gosh, she's so lucky.
Yes.
You know, her whole life is in front of her. And what a great opportunity and what a great city. And she's got it all there.
Yes.
You know, at her feet. And, you know, and I dropped off and went home feeling a bit sort of, you know, not the overriding feeling of I'm going to miss her. It was more, Gosh, that was me.
Well, yeah, I think there's probably a part of that.
Yeah.
I think there probably is, because, yeah, your life has well, it's unlikely to open up as much as theirs.
Yeah.
And that's as it should be. That's the circle
but you
of
want
life.
That, but, yeah, I was about to use that exact phrase. You want the best for them. You want them to have all those things, but there's a part of you that thinks, oh, I wish that was me doing that again.
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I think I was reading earlier, I was telling you that you're not alone in this. Celebrities go through it as well. Gordon Ramsay, I was reading today, has recently confessed that I think his second child's gone off to uni and he's struggling. So certainly not alone.
A lot of my friends, actually, because of the age of my children, most of my friends, female friends, you tend to get in circles of friends with your children. They've all gone off, and they're all responding to it in very, very different ways. People are joining choirs, people are doing all sorts of things. But what a lot of them have said is the minute they come back after having dropped them off, is that they go into that child's room and sit there. Okay. I did a complete clean, and actually it was lovely. I went in with a bin bag to get rid of things that I've wanted to get rid of for years. And that was quite... I was toying with the whole Airbnb, but I decided not.
Are you serious?
I do miss them terribly.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was self-preservation in some ways.
Yeah.
So right, well, that part of that life, that is over and it's changing. And I need to accept that in some ways. So that was quite interesting, the whole bin bag.
That's quite an interesting one. I wouldn't feel going to my daughter's bedroom and sort of chucking stuff out without asking her. And the thought of... having an Airbnb, I just don't at the moment. In my head, they haven't gone, though they're gaining independence and they're growing, and you know they can do things themselves. Until they actually get their own place post uni, I won't sort of feel that they've gone. I think so. Maybe that's just a different coping mechanism. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, my son liked the idea of the Airbnb because he thought because it was his room, then he would get the money for it. Hence his approval at me getting rid of some of his old toys. He's 19.
Yeah, because he's sticking on eBay and you're going to
get the money. Exactly, yeah.
Brilliant. So what's your plans then? What's your plans? Are you sort of taking on more hobbies or planning travel?
Yeah, well, yeah, I'm now, as I say, I do a film, involved with a film club and a book club, and I've started taking up a lot more exercise, which is really, really good. And I have a very flexible marketing role, and I'm also doing some work with my husband as well.
Okay.
So I'm actually really quite busy, and the busier I am, actually, the less I dwell on that nest.
Which is good.
On the nest, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, that's really good. Unfortunately, we're coming to the end of that time. It's been really, really interesting chatting about a subject that I think affects so many people, and so often on here on Just Women, we talk about new businesses, new ventures, etc. So it's just nice to just have a chat about something that affects so many of us parents, really. I was going to say women, but actually parents generally. So that was Jackie Gray talking about the empty nest. Thank you very much, Jackie, and I hope it all sort of works itself out for you.
Thank you
very much.
This is Just Women, every Tuesday at 1 o'clock on Brooklands Radio.
Welcome back to Just Women. I'm Amanda Weller, presenting today alongside Anne Twist. I'd now like to welcome Chrissy Cumming Walters, a solicitor specialising in marital breakdown. So, Chrissy, born and brought up in America in the Deep South.
Yes.
What led you to put down roots here in Surrey?
Well, the short answer is I had an early midlife crisis following my own divorce and decided I needed a change. So I came to England.
Oh, right.
Surbiton first.
Surbiton?
Yes.
Okay. So when did you arrive in the UK then?
About 10 years ago, September 2000... Actually, 11 years, September 2007.
Okay. So you're an unusual kind of solicitor in that you can practice both in the US and here in the UK.
Yes, that's right.
So how did all of that happen?
Well, I qualified in the US first. I went to law school, Brooklyn Law School, and I qualified New York, New Jersey, and Pennsylvania from 2003. And I had a very varied practice in the US. So there was a lot of corporate, commercial, some litigation and that sort of thing. So when I decided that I was moving over here, I just had to do the qualified lawyers transfer test for the SRA, and I completely changed the area that I was practicing in. So I decided to do a training contract and just did family law, and it's been that way ever since.
And So family law is your obviously your main your complete interest now. That's what you're
working on.
Okay. And sorry, Anne.
No, I was going to say, what made you sort of focus on family law in particular? What was the sort of draw for that?
Well, when I went to law school, I was actually one of those sort of more philanthropic people, and I really wanted to be in a courtroom, and I really wanted to hopefully have a positive effect on people's lives. And obviously working for, you know, corporate guys making billions, it wasn't doing it for me. So when I decided that I was changing and I was moving over here, I was going to change everything. And I looked at areas that I had enjoyed studying in law school, and family was what fit.
Yeah. And obviously you trained in America and you came here. And you obviously did, you know, some training here. But is it a huge shift in, you know how law works here compared to America? Or is it...
Well, it's different here because here you've got solicitors and barristers. And for the most part, solicitors don't do barrister work and barristers don't do solicitor work. There is some graying of those lines now, but they do still exist. Whereas in America, you're an attorney, you're counsel, you do all of it. So you have all the client contact as well as going into court and presenting the case to the judge and or jury. So that's the main difference. Yeah. Whereas here, solicitors are the ones that have the most client contact, that do the majority of the statements and paperwork and those sorts of things, sort of formulate the case, and then the barristers present it.
So they sort of step into court having sort of skim read the arguments and everything, and they're kind of the showman, if you like. Would that be a fair comment?
Or? Well, I don't know about the showman so much. They're considered the specialists. So if there's... we're all specialists, but they're considered to be the ones that have sort of the intricate points of law that they can, you know, bring in the case law, sort of twist it around to their own particular argument, present it in such a way that will persuade the judge to see it in that light, rather than perhaps in the light the other side's trying to present and that sort of thing. And most solicitors don't really get involved on that sort of level.
No.
I mean, myself having the U.S. training, I do actually argue in court, not as much as I used to, but I would do it
more readily
than what some others would.
And probably quite nice because you can actually, with the whole history, having seen everything through right from the very beginning, then you have that sense of the full picture, don't you, and the continuity.
You do. You've got all the background, and sometimes that can be quite relevant, particularly in family cases, because the smallest detail can actually make quite a big difference.
Yeah.
So your specialty now is family law. And is there a sort of a, because I think I was reading that, you know, you do get involved with this kind of financial aspect of family breakdown. Is that, is that something you're focusing on more now than?
It is. And the reason that I'm doing that, I mean, obviously there's children matters that are ancillary to the divorce that are related to family breakdown as well. But from the financial aspect, it's because I can draw on my prior experience. I did securities reg and the corporate and commercial, and all that stuff actually is quite relevant, particularly if you've got family trust interests or if you've got family businesses or there are some sort of business interests involved in the case. You need to have a knowledge of how to read those balance sheets and those account statements and that sort of stuff. So I can draw on that, which is actually quite useful.
Yeah, incredibly useful. Yeah. What is, I don't even know how to say this, TOLATA?
TOLATA.
TOLATA.
TOLATA is Trusts of Land and Appointment of Trustees Act.
Sorry, say that again.
Trusts of Land and Appointment of Trustees Act.
Okay.
It's very important.
Okay. So what is it?
What is it?
The reason I say it's very important is because the fastest sort of growing type of family in the UK is cohabiting couples. And there's actually been sort of a lot of stuff in the press lately about, rights and interests not being there upon a relationship breakdown, where even if a party or a partner dies and they leave a widow and children, but they haven't made the right sorts of provisions for them by way of wills, there's no automatic right of inheritance. There's no automatic right of pension provision or anything like that. Mm. And a lot of people aren't aware of that. And actually, even exceptionally intelligent, well-read people have a belief that there is such a thing as a common law marriage.
Yeah.
And it doesn't exist, and it hasn't for a very, very long time.
Yeah.
So you know, it's one of those things where if you're going to, you know, buy property together, if you're going to live, you know, as what women say would be a traditional nuclear family, a married family, you need to be aware of the fact that you're not really protected, and you need to take very progressive, positive steps from the get-go to make sure that that protection's in place. And it's awful conversations that nobody wants to have.
So in what kind of way? So this is the sort of the prenups, that kind of thing?
It's similar to a prenup. You can have a cohabitation agreement, which actually strangely has a little bit more force behind it because you're not a married couple.
Yeah.
So you, in some senses,
you can kind of justifiably stand up and say, we're not married, therefore we really need to formalize this.
Yes, it is a contract. Yeah. It is a deed. Yes. Yeah. And prenups are also deeds, but because of the marriage aspect of it, and because of the broad sweeping discretion that the courts have and do exercise under the Matrimonial Causes Act, it's really sort of a crapshoot as to whether or not it's going to be enforced and how it's going to be enforced.
Interesting. So actually a prenup is not the security that some people might think it's going to be when they when they do it.
Yes.
Actually, I noticed from your sort of bio or whatever that you also do, I don't know what these are, pre- and post-nup agreements. So it's a post-nup. You've married, you haven't had a prenup, and suddenly one party says, actually, I think we need to sort of formalise some agreement.
That can happen.
Yeah.
The way that it normally happens is that the parties were negotiating a prenuptial agreement, and they either didn't think it was going to be as involved as it actually was, or some sort of dispute arose, or that there was something that meant that it wasn't finalized or executed before the actual marriage date happened.
Okay.
And so it just sort of continues. For example, right now I have a client who we started off doing a prenup. We're still negotiating the postnup. They've been married over a year.
Oh, okay. I kind of have visions. Yeah, that makes sense. I kind of have visions of, you know, they've been married a while and one party is thinking, I don't think this is going to last, therefore I need to get something.
Well, I mean, but it does actually happen. For example, if somebody comes into like a large inheritance or something like that, and for whatever reason they want to ring fence it, or they want to protect it for, you know, particularly we've got blended families.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, if you've got, you know, stepchildren and biological children within the same household, one party, you know, who perhaps comes into a large inheritance says, you know what, actually, my biological child, I want to make that provision for them. And so that's when that sort of thing would actually come into play, as well as, you know, wills and what have you. But you have to sort of cover all the bases because you don't know what will happen first.
No,
it's true, isn't it?
Gosh, complicated and can be quite awkward, I would think.
It can be very awkward. Yeah. I mean, one of the hopeful benefits of that sort of thing is you're having these awful conversations in your bedroom, right, at home. But hopefully when you go in to see your lawyer, they actually take a sort of a collaborative approach to it rather than an adversarial approach to it. Because if you take an adversarial approach to it, you may as well just go issue at the CFC. So,
And actually, if you're taking an adversarial approach, then you definitely need those post and prenups, don't you?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
And I think you also get involved in domestic violence cases, is that right?
Not as much anymore.
No. Okay.
I haven't done those for quite a few years. I did an awful lot of them when I worked in legal aid. But you know, now if there's domestic violence, for the most part, that is one of the few areas where legal aid is still available for family clients. But the sort of the, this is going to sound really awful, but the end of the market that I am currently working in, a lot of the time the domestic violence aspect of it is something that's just not really talked about. And so it's not something that they necessarily wish to pursue. They want to get the divorce.
Okay. Well, we're going to take a very quick break. We're chatting with Chrissy Cumming-Walters about sort of financial arrangements in sort of relationship breakdown. Don't go away. We'll be right back continuing that subject.
You're listening to Just Women on Brooklyn's Radio.
Hair Mechanics is Surrey's premier hair and beauty salon group, with two superior salons, one in the heart of West Byfleet and the second in the Bourne Valley Garden Centre of Addlesden. Hair Mechanics offers hairstyling and finishing, beauty and holistic therapies, nail treatments, tanning and electrolysis. For our office promotions, contact information and more, please see our website hairmechanics.co.uk or call 01932 350877. Hair Mechanics, Surrey's premier hair and beauty salon group.
There's a new restaurant in Esher. Seven Bluebird serves modern European classics for breakfast, lunch and dinner. not forgetting afternoon tea. They offer delicious food made from locally sourced products, all freshly prepared, offering great service in a classy yet cozy setting. Ladies looking for a special place, try us for lunch or your special occasion. Seven Bluebirds serves breakfast all day. Yes, eggs benny even at 3 p.m. and all the classics as well as our highly rated warm banana bread and heavenly French toast. The Sunday lunch menu offers a two-course set menu with our most popular items at only £16. Menus and reservations at 7bluebirds.co.uk.
Are you feeling depressed, lonely, stressed, suffering from low self-esteem? At Esha Groves, we understand the demands everyday life can place on you. That's why we've brought together a community of skilled experts to work with you in a small group therapy setting. You'll meet others in similar situations and learn techniques to help you feel better. Experience a sanctuary of tranquility and well-being at Esha Groves. Call us now on 0345 1122 300 or visit us at eshagroves.com.
This is Just Women, every Tuesday at 1 o'clock on Brooklands Radio.
Welcome back to Just Women. We're chatting now with Chrissy Cumming-Walters, a solicitor specialising in marital breakdown. And we've been chatting, obviously, about the financial aspects. And I just wanted to ask you, Chrissy, about, you know, you've been here, I think you said, about 11 years.
Yeah.
How have you seen the law change, you know, in regards to divorce since you've been here?
It's changed quite significantly. Not necessarily the law itself so much as the procedure and sort of the overall approach to it. When I was doing my training contract, which seems like donkey's years ago now, at Dawson Cornwell, it was still, even though resolution was obviously there, and people tried to abide by the resolution code of conduct and what have you, it was still very adversarial, and that was expected.
Yeah.
You would have sort of nasty letters, you know, and that sort of puffery and positioning going back and forth. You'd run straight off to court with, you know, non-urgent applications and all of that sort of just to get first in time and to have orders made, what have you. Excuse me. Whereas now, there's actually a requirement in most cases that you at least attempt mediation, even if you only attend the mediation information and assessment meeting in order to get the certificate to start the proceedings. There's still a requirement that you at least take that step.
Yeah.
And the adversarial aspect of it has sort of, it's not gone, but it has diminished quite a lot from what it was, and also sort of the gatekeeping that's involved in getting things issued and in having your case heard, and even the type of judge or tribunal that's going to hear it has changed quite significantly, particularly in children, where now most cases are really heard by magistrates or lay justices.
So it's sort of, to sum up, does this mean that it's easier to get divorced now than it was 11 years ago?
No, I'd say it's about the same.
Oh, okay.
I'd say it's about the same. You have an extra step that you have to take if you want to sort out the finances. But one of the things that sort of plays into that is that now you have a lot larger number of litigants in person, people who are trying to do it themselves.
Okay, when you say do it themselves, just how would they do that?
If you're in proceedings, they represent themselves, so they do all of their own paperwork, they show up at court on their own without a solicitor or a barrister or any sort of advocate for them, sometimes with McKinsey friends, which is a different topic. But they're pretty much on their own. And that makes it really difficult, particularly if you are the solicitor with a paying client, because you actually have a duty, which a lot of people don't understand. You have a duty to inform that person who is in person as to sort of what the procedure is, what they should and shouldn't be doing, not necessarily telling them how to put their case. So not the nitty gritty of it.
Yeah.
But, you know, you need to look at Section 25 of the Matrimonial Clause, something like that. And that can be very off-putting for the other party. So that creates difficulties. And also the time management aspect, the courts are so just inundated. And when you have litigants in person, a lot of times they don't do things in the right way. Things have to be redone. Hearings are not effective. And it takes a lot of extra time. It can take a lot of extra costs.
So they're doing it really to save money. But actually, in the long run, it could be costing them because they're not they can't give themselves the right advice and they're not following procedure the way they should do.
Yeah, so you have that aspect of it as well. And one thing that I have seen and a lot of my colleagues have seen in our own practices is a tremendous increase in the amount of consent orders where we're getting instructed at the final hour just to take an agreement and transmute it into a consent order that the court will seal. And sometimes people don't even do that and they just send it off. And there's a lot of huge potholes and you know, gaping voids that you can fall into with that. And a lot of times, you know, myself included, some other solicitors, we actually have clients sign a disclaimer because there are so many risks involved where you haven't had full financial disclosure, where you haven't had these, you know, horrid conversations that you really just have to have.
Yeah.
And where you haven't perhaps thought of some things that, you know, a solicitor who's been doing it for, you know, 10 years, 20 years, whatever, you know, will think of automatically. And it's something that, you know, some people don't think that pensions are in the pot. Of course pensions are in the pot. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, I had this pension before we were married. Well, that's fine, but they don't have a retirement fund. So how are they supposed to live?
And they gave up work because you...
And they gave up... Yes. Yeah, so, I mean, there's so many different sort of things that play into it. And the real danger is that if you get to where you have a consent order and you haven't had full advice or you haven't had proper advice or you haven't had any advice and you submit it to the court and the court seals it, because 9.9 times out of 10 they do, and you haven't made proper provision for one or the other of the parties or the children or what have you, a lot of times you can't vary it. So you're stuck. I mean, you can always go back for children, but you can't always go back for yourself. So if you haven't, if you don't, you know what, I don't want it. You know, this is such a traumatic event, and I get that, I do. It's such a traumatic event, it's so emotional, I just need it done, just sign it, I want it done. And then you say, well, I'm sorry, but you don't have a mortgage capacity, how are you going to live?
Yeah.
You know, what are you going to do with the house? What are you going to do about this? What are you going to do about, oh, I don't care. And then you get 5 years down the road, something's gone wrong, and now...
They want to come back for more.
They want to come back. And most of the time you can't. It's very, very rare that you can come back and very in particular, a capital order. So you can try on a bit on maintenance, but you have to have had that sort of dealt with in the first instance as well.
Yeah. So complex.
It's really.
It does make sense, doesn't it? And you know, there's, as you say, there's so much to be aware of. And the layperson just isn't.
Yeah. And you just don't know. And, you know, Google is excellent, but at the same time, it's not. You cannot believe everything that you read on the internet. You can't even believe everything that you read on government websites. I can't tell you the number of clients that I've had who contacted me for initial consultations saying, well, I'd like to get divorced, but I know I have to wait 2 years. I'm like, well, why do you have to wait 2 years? Oh, well, you know, because then we can do 2 years with consent. Yeah, I don't. No. And it took several calls like that for me to, you know, sort of ascertain what they were getting.
Yeah.
And on the gov.uk website, it's actually quite misleading that unless you have blame, because of this no fault issue that we have, unless you have blame, you have to wait 2 years. And they don't understand that blame doesn't have to be, you know, sort of, oh, you know, they tried to run me over with the car. It doesn't have to reach that sort of level. Yeah. There's lots of things that you can do and that you can include and ways that you can word things that will show the court that the marriage is irretrievably broken down.
Yeah, I was going to say these irreconcilable differences. I mean, that's a big part of it, isn't it?
It's a huge part of it. It's all about the way that you put the case, which is why the particulars are really important and why it's really quite frightening that now so many people are doing these things themselves.
Yeah, yeah, it's scary actually.
So on a slightly different note, I know that recently you went to a family reform event.
Yes,
yes. Can you?
That
what happened there?
Plays in quite a lot to what we're talking about.
Oh, does
because,
it? Okay.
Whereas I had hoped that the reform event would be talking about the legislation currently in Parliament and those sorts of things, maybe some ideas, you know, for prenuptial agreement, you know, and those sort. No, instead, what it was the launching of the online divorce system and the online financial remedy system, which looks quite a lot like the CGT calculator, because they did actually show it to us at the event. And it is through the gov.uk website. There is some terminology for explaining things there that I don't necessarily agree with. And it is a point and click sort of thing that will allow lay people and solicitors to file divorce petitions online, sort of like Money Claim Online. And they're also rolling it out for financial remedies for your initiating applications for consent orders. So you have to issue the application, and it's called for dismissal purposes only, and you attach a consent order and some other documents as well. And they're going to allow that to be done all online as well. And then judges will just sort of look at it from all over the country and just go, okay, well, they've done the paperwork. Hopefully, I would hope that they'd look at it a little bit more deeply than that. But, you know, as we say, that the courts are so very overrun that there's a huge risk there that, you know, the judge won't go, well, wait a minute, you know, there's two minor children here. This can't be enough. Yeah. And that sort of thing. And so that is very concerning for me. There's also myself and another participant at the event raised the point of, because it's through the gov.uk website, it looks like
it's official.
And there should be sort of a separation of, you know, this, because it's not just family cases that are doing this, but it's also criminal and some civil and that sort of thing. And it's like, well, you know, if it's you versus the state, you don't necessarily want it to look like a government website that you're using, because there's no sort of differentiation. And I get that it needs to be user friendly, but I'm not entirely sure that I agree with the format that they've done and that they're using. But I mean, we'll see what happens.
And who's making these reforms? And the Law Society itself, or
no, it's HMCTS, and the Law Society is involved with it, and the Law Commission's involved with it as well. And you know, they're doing pilots.
I was just going to say, they're testing it out at the moment.
Yeah, they're testing it out at the moment. So, but a lot of it is going to be rolled out next year.
Gosh, that's a big change, isn't it?
And some of them are already in the, I'm sorry, you say beta, I think. We say beta.
Yeah, so you as lawyers, you know, presumably they listen to your feedback?
Well, they do. And you know, from a lawyer's perspective, if you're the one filling out the form, it's great because it's fast, it's convenient, and you get an immediate sort of, you know, we've gotten this and it's issued. And instead of, you know, for example, at the moment, I waited 6 weeks for a Form A, which is an originating application for financial remedy, to be issued in Barnet. Instead of issuing it, they transferred it to Watford. So it took 8 weeks in total from the time that we sent it to the court just to have the application come back with a court seal with the generated notice of when the first directions appointment is going to be.
My goodness.
Yeah. So, you know, from that perspective, it's fantastic because you get stuff really quickly and the lag time is only like a week to 2 weeks and what have you. So that's great. And it also frees up existing court staff to do other things like answer the phones, which they don't like to do. I mean, literally days you can call without anybody answering the phone. Yeah. So from that perspective, it's fantastic. But, you know, my concern is always, you know, going to be the client's best interest, safeguarding the client. If they're not taking the advice, then, you know, there's no one there to stop them hitting send.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm sensing, talking to you, obviously very much a people person. How much of your time, and typically most solicitors in your roles sort of time, is sort of client facing, would you say?
Probably about 90% of it.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I was sort of sensing there might be a lot of paperwork and that, you know, your client facing time is quite reduced. But
Because... Well, I mean, I don't know about other solicitors, but I like to do the paperwork facing the client, as it were. So if we're doing the financial disclosure, the client's there.
Yeah.
I'm talking to them, you know, either Skype, on the phone, in person, or what have you, going through it with them, explaining what I'm doing, explaining why I'm changing their figures or not changing their figures and that sort of thing. And there's a lot of strategy. Excuse me. There's a lot of strategy involved pretty much from the outset. So if you're not having those conversations, you know, what they think the outcome should be or what they want, you might not actually understand where they're coming from and how best to achieve that. So it's both. It's a combination.
Okay. Understood. Obviously, this is a very important and detailed subject, and we could talk about this for hours, I'm sure, but we're rapidly coming to an end now of our allotted time. So could you let us know if people want to get in touch with you, if they're going through this and might want to sort of employ you or talk to you further? What's the best way for them to make contact with you?
Well, they can email me.
Okay.
Which is ccw@keystonelaw.co.uk. So Keystone Law is the law firm.
Okay.
And I have an excellent profile. Yeah. So please do
look
at
it. Yes, I'm sure they can see that on there. I've seen it. It's an excellent profile and excellent testimonials, may I add.
Oh,
yes,
thank you.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, definitely. So thank you very much, Chrissy. So that was Chrissy Cumming-Walters of Keystone Law. It's all been very thought-provoking, so thank you for that. And I'd like to say thank you to all of our guests today on Just Women. That's Jackie Gray, Chrissy Cumming-Walters. And thank you also to my fellow presenter, Amanda Weller, and to Graham Laycock, who has produced the show today.
Thank you, Anne. We've had some great guests today. As ever, we are always on the lookout for interesting women to be guests on our show. So if that's you or someone you know, please do email us with all the information to justwomen@brooklandsradio.co.uk.
Yeah, it'd be great if you could get in touch with us. So if you'd like to find out about past guests, please go to Just Women, the Just Women section of our website, brooklandsradio.co.uk. And to find out what's coming up, please take a look at our Facebook page and don't forget to follow us while you're there. So thank you very much for listening. And please do join us again next week at 1 o'clock. And goodbye from me, Anne Twist.
And goodbye from me, Amanda Weller.
You're listening to Just Women on Brooklands Radio. You can join in by emailing any comments or questions you may have to justwomen@brooklandsradio.co.uk or check us out on Facebook. Search for Just Women at Brooklands Radio. Just Women is just what you need.